You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with DM Simons. DM, thanks so much for being with me today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
DM, tell me a little bit about what's happening in your studio right now, or just what you're working on, and where are you at the moment?
What I do mostly is think. So it's thinking. I'm almost done with a small piece. I can't really talk about it because it takes a while for the piece to talk to me about what I've done. There are things that I'm interested in. One is muteness. Another is telling a story. Something that's suggested is what I'm going after. And hopefully people will spend a little bit of time trying to understand what I suggest. So it's not what's seen, it's what's suggested in the picture.
And so let's talk a little bit about perhaps your thinking process. You just talked about the kind of painting or work that you're on, kind of having a dialogue with yourself about
yes.
whether it's finished or how it's coming along. Can you tell me a little bit about that dialogue? Maybe that's a good way to start off to get into really how you're thinking about it.
We all have ideas, and we all want to tell a story if we make things. And so I'm interested in cliches. I think that cliches are more interesting than images and pictures. And cliches have been around since the beginning of time. How can I mine a cliche? How can I make it interesting? What about an image that is a representation of a representation can give me an interest that I want to put that in a picture? And so I'm very interested in the representation of representation. I remember when I was a kid, and I'm sorry, I'm sort of discursive.
That's fine. Go on. Tell me, yeah. But where
okay. When I was a kid, when I was in graduate school and stuff like that, we were reading people like Foucault and Baudrillard. And I remember one thing that Baudrillard said, which was when you put a representation next to the real, that the representation is revealed as a lie. And I thought about that, and for me, I didn't think that. I thought that he was wrong. I thought when you have a representation or a representation, that becomes as real or as a matter of fact thing as the so-called real. Because what happens is that you removed a generation or two generations from what is real. I'm talking about pictorial intelligence here. And then it becomes its own thing because of time and distance. And so how can you say that the representation put next to the real is a lie when I could also say that the real put next to the representation of a representation is a lie? So I think they both have equal weight. Of course, I'm talking as a storyteller, in a way. So when I come up with an image, when I come up with an idea, I just start working on it. And back to what you asked me, it takes a while, maybe a week or two, till I understand what I'm doing. Everything looks like a huge mess. and then somehow it works out, or it doesn't work out, but then it's on its own. And there's this distance from that picture during the making of it and afterwards that I feel disassociated with. I don't know if this makes sense.
It does make sense. I mean, I'm thinking about also what you said earlier as a child, but younger, this notion of revealing the lie and wondering if that's part of the dialogue that then happens, since we are talking about also cliche,
yeah,
kind of,
yeah,
revealing
the lie, or the cliche. I remember once, you know, I wake up and I think of it, I'm thinking of my work, I'm thinking of a lot of other artists' work, I'm thinking of writers, I'm thinking of filmmakers, all that enters my head. I don't know why, it's just who I am. And I was thinking about, what the hell are you doing? What are you doing? Why do you wake up every day? Why do you go and you start making stuff? And I was in the shower, and as romantic as this may seem or poetic, it's just what I came up with. And I just said, I'm not making art, I'm making lies, because the truth hurts. And somewhere in that small, and that came to me years ago. And,
I'm not making art, I'm making lies because the truth hurts. That's what
right.
came to you?
Yeah. And it makes saying seem corny, but it's what came to me, and it made sense to me in a way. And how much does one really reveal their vulnerability? Reveal what they are, and how do we really even know what we are? You know, all that, I guess a life's experience goes into your work. It's not just what is now. It's not just from when you've been educated. It's from the time that you were born, and maybe perhaps before you were born, that goes into the work that one makes now. Again, this may seem corny, but that's how I work.
No, that seems clear. I think that's something that is the case for all artists, right? The you know, your
yes,
life experience,
no,
everything you touch goes into your work.
I agree. And that's pretty much what I'm saying. There are so many, many wonderful artists, people that make things, that write things, that film, even people in different fields. I mean, we're in a field of production. We know that. But the thing is, let's not produce too much. Let's think about what we're producing. Let's think about what we want to say. I'm not saying anything. What I'm saying, what I'm portraying, is nothing different than tens of thousands of other makers have said. But I'm trying to give it my own stink. And I think having one's own stink in work is important, especially since they're making it.
And so let me talk about that, your own stink. By that, you mean your own voice, your own signature, your own imprint,
yeah,
or something
I like,
else.
Yeah, I played sports for many, many years. It was always... So the whole idea of smell meant something to me, and I wanted, and so my I just came up with the thing, work that I make should stink the way I stink, and you know, and I feel that for others too, you know, make it your own.
Well, of course, there's a double meaning there too, which is different than using a cliche. I feel like
the idea of
the cliche anymore, but the idea of, you know, it should stink and yet stink, you know, be unique. So let's talk a little bit about the cliche, because
that's almost a wordplay there. Yeah, I mean, again, unique is too strong of a word for me. I mean, I don't think there is anything that's unique. I think we're pretty much all the same. We just have a different take on how we go about making our work. And I think that work we're in a field. We're in certain subfields of how and where we're making things. And somehow it has to have your stink, even though your work could be similar to every of someone else's. I mean, there was a saying in the Kabbalah, which I'm going to paraphrase it. I'm going to get it a bit wrong. Sorry about that. But
sure,
it goes
that's fine.
Something like everything in the next world will be like it is in this world, just a little different. And that, to me, was very profound. And it just struck a chord in me. And I feel that way about work, about other artists, fellow artists, writers, that everything we do is similar, but a bit different. And for some reason, that makes me feel connected. I mean, we're in a tradition, and when you're in a tradition, the only way to be radical, as Ralph Shapey said, is to make something that's yours. So
let's talk about that makes sense, and that's clear. I mean, it's you know, we're moving around the word unique, but that's an interesting way of looking at it. We're all similar, but a little bit different.
Yeah.
That's more inclusive somehow, more of a almost a community.
Yeah, no, and it is the entire. We're not. I mean, the old again. Put back to cliche. We're not an island unto ourselves. We're connected. We're connected to everybody in our field. We're connected to people, or we straddle one field to another. And the whole idea of the connectivity, I think, is very, very important. Not only within the field, but to humankind.
Right. It's the glue that keeps us.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. That's how I look at it.
And let's talk a little bit about the content, other content within the work, because your work is often figurative and does seem to be telling specific stories sometimes.
After you said figurative,
I was asking about the content. What about the content within your work that also tells a slightly different story, could we say? Because there is also a story being told, right?
Yeah. No. It is. You get ideas. You wake up and something strikes you, and you mull it over and you think. And you're thinking about thinking, and you're thinking about what you want to say and what you want to say at this moment. But it was almost, I'm going to jump back to Louis Buñuel. And
that's fine.
And the thing is Buñuel had the same thing through all his films. By the time I was about 30 years old, I had seen 26 of his films, something like that. I remember it was a lot. I just couldn't get enough of the guy. And it was always the same theme, but he did so many different things to get at that theme. And that was very interesting to me. And that really struck me because I understood. At that point, I thought I understood. But when you're a young person, you think you understand things, and you really don't. In fact, even as an old person, I don't really understand things. But you think you do. We're very good at fooling ourselves. I think that's all of humankind. Finding images or finding a representation that I can make into a representation of that representation, and putting them together, putting images together or a singular image is what I'm after. But it has to be something that strikes me. It's not just going out and it's like, why does it strike me? Muteness is very, very important to what I do. It's a restraint. And for some reason, if you hold it back, you're hoping that when others look at what you've done, that they will come up with their own idea of what you've done, their own story. If you put images together, the biggest thing I think in my work is cleavage. There is a cleavage or space between two images, and it's not about what you're looking at, but what the work suggests. And I can't tell you or anyone what that work should suggest. That's up to the viewer. And that's how I look at it. I'm not trying to say, hey, this is like Where's Waldo or anything. But I want you to... I guess what I'm saying is, in a lot of ways, I respect the viewer, as you should, because they're another human being. And so what I'm... By putting the images together, or a singular image, I'm leaving a space. It's the cleavage between the image. There's a distance. Time is a distance. Patience, distance, time. They're all related, and somehow that's what goes into the picture. I can't really tell you a lot about what they're about. I mean, you have an idea, again.
Yeah, that's clear, right? We bring that to it. That's something that you can. I understand by what you're saying. Direct the listener to the show or myself by then articulating it.
Yeah. So again, not till I'm into something for about a week or 2 weeks, and then I start to understand what I'm doing and what I see in the picture. The picture has a life of its own. I'm just sort of like its tool. And I think it goes back to the thinking. It's really about thinking. And it's like, I never thought of my work as figurative. In fact, I don't like those terms. I don't like the bureaucratic terms, and they are bureaucratic terms because everybody, it's about the order of things. And the thing is, we all make work. If you name something, you own it. If you own it, you collect it. If you collect it, you warehouse it. And after that, it's gone. It's just in some deep, deep, dusty place. And so the idea of naming things is problematic for me. But you can't help it. It's like you're fighting something that's what we do. We have to say, oh, that, is so-and-so. So, again, also, as much as I say that, naming things is a shorthand for understanding what you're talking about. I don't know if any of this makes sense. It's just the way...
It does make sense. Remarkably, it does make sense. You're being very clear about that, and it's an interesting discussion, I think, on content and representation and a number of things you're saying. Let me ask you this. I want to ask you... what you're reading now, and I know you have a particular way of doing that, but is there something else that you want to mention before I ask you that last question, which is what you're reading?
No, I think all I'm doing, actually, I think all I've done is repeated myself through this whole little our talk here. So I don't think so.
I think so far we've gotten down to something. You know, how you approach work, how the audience approaches that, and the idea of what uniqueness means or doesn't mean, I think, as has been articulated in a very interesting way that kind of points to what you said at the beginning, which is you're doing a lot of thinking.
Yeah. I hope so. I think that as far as reading, I'm reading three books right now. One, I'm almost done with War and Peace. To me, I had read it when I was a kid, or I should say a young man, and reading it now, it's like looking at it with new eyes. I'm almost at the epilogue. And I've always been astounded just by the way Tolstoy came up with sentences, his descriptions. There's something that's so interior about his writing, but at the same time that has the breath of the world, the breath of the universe in his writing. And and I've read a lot, I read a lot, and he always just has blown me away. And especially in the times we're living in now, it's interesting that just, you know, this whole focus of this pretty much 5 or 6 year period, you know, in the very, very early 19th century, it seems so much a part of the world today. And some of the things he talks about, he talks about that we are property of history, which is very, very tangent to Marx and historical materialism. And yes, I'm not an economist or historian. But the thing is that there's an oblique connection between, and also because they were contemporaries, pretty much between historical materialism from Marx and the property of history that Tolstoy talks about. So it's just a remarkable book, remarkable writing, remarkable thinking. The other books I'm reading is Mrs. Osmond by John Banville. And I've always liked Banville, and I'm still at the beginning of it. And then the third book that I'm reading is it's called Romanian Notebook by Cyrus Consoli. So that's what I'm reading right now. But, you know, they all give me different things. And the one thing that they all have in common, which might be under the table, is class conflict. And I think class conflict is something that is really, really important and always has been important. It's not a unique thing. Anyway.
Yeah, I want to thank you for talking with me today. It's been a pleasure, and I appreciate what you've the time you've shared with me.
Well, you're welcome, and I thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.